I'll read a verse from Bhagavad Gita. I've been reading consecutively in the evenings, so I just read the next one. This is the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 71. I'll read the Sanskrit first, and then translation and commentary. Vihaya kamanya sarvan pumangs charati nispriha nirmamo nirahankara sa shanti madigachati. Translation. A person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship and it is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. Purport. To become desireless means not to desire anything for sense gratification. In other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desirelessness. To understand one's actual position as the eternal servitor of Krishna without falsely claiming this material body to be oneself and without falsely claiming proprietorship over anything in the world is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. One who is situated in this perfect stage knows that because Krishna is the proprietor of everything, everything must be used for the satisfaction of Krishna. Arjuna did not want to fight for his own sense satisfaction, but when he became fully Krishna conscious, he fought because Krishna wanted him to fight. For himself, there was no real desire to fight, but for Krishna, the same Arjuna fought to his best ability. Real desirelessness is desire for the satisfaction of Krishna, not an artificial attempt to abolish desires. The living entity cannot be desireless or senseless, but he does have to change the quality of the desires. A materially desireless person certainly knows that everything belongs to Krishna, Ishavasyam idang sarvam, and therefore he does not falsely claim proprietorship over anything. This transcendental knowledge is based on self-realization, namely knowing perfectly well that every living entity is an eternal part and parcel of Krishna in spiritual identity, and that the eternal position of the living entity is therefore never on the level of Krishna or greater than him. This understanding of Krishna consciousness is the basic principle of real peace. Om Gyanatimanandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unminitam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Kuroti Vachalam Pungum Langayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gunandina Taranam Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sanyavari Pastachyade Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Thank you for coming. I will try to speak a little bit about the meaning of this verse and its context of the Bhagavad Gita, and especially try to explain it in a way that's consistent with the commentary given by Srila Prabhupada. And I say that because when I first read this verse and looked at it, I was thinking, this is It's a tough verse to swallow for people who are coming to the Hare Krishna temple, who may not be so familiar with the practices, lifestyle, philosophy, and to all of a sudden get an introductory presentation that, well, the only way you can become peaceful is to give up sense gratification, be free from desires, give up all sense of proprietorship, and be devoid of false ego. And sounds like not a very good introductory proposal. And this is supposed to be an introductory presentation of Krishna consciousness. So that's why I said, hope I can speak in consistent with the presentation Srila Prabhupada gives in his commentary, because Srila Prabhupada understood that although the message of Bhagavad Gita is profound, deep, advanced for those who really understand the meanings, the truth behind, and the intention behind the speaker, who's Krishna, and the objective he's trying to fulfill by delivering his message to Arjuna, which culminates in, okay, Arjuna, after you've heard all this, now just surrender to me. And I'll deliver you from all sinful reactions. And then the next verse, after telling Arjuna to surrender, he tells Arjuna that should always think of me constantly, 24 hours a day. You offer your homages to me, worship me, and surely you'll attain me. Bhagavad Gita's teachings are meant to culminate in constant remembrance of Krishna. But here we see in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we already see a very profound requirement being suggested that if you want peace, then you have to be devoid of these attachments. And most people may claim, and rightfully so, I'm not devoid of these attachments. I'm not free from false ego. And neither am I ready to give up all sense of proprietorship. I mean, I've worked hard to get where I am today. And all of a sudden, first introductory verse I hear from Bhagavad Gita is, give it all up. Therefore, it really has to be understood in context. And of course, that's what I found was Srila Prabhupada's glory in making the teachings of Lord Krishna accessible by putting him into context of how we can actually get from point A to point B without fear of thinking that the only way I can achieve point B or get to point B is by fulfilling all these essential preliminary requirements to give all these things up. Prabhupada right there, for he said something very important, as I just noticed as I was reading. He says that, in other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actual desirelessness. In other words, if we look at that within context, Srila Prabhupada says, okay, desirelessness, on one hand, we think is to have no desires. We speak about this point a lot. We oftentimes quote a verse, Chaitanya Charitamrita. I think we spoke about it last week here, because that verse was right within the commentary. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atayeva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakaliya Shanta. That Krishna Bhakta, devotee of Krishna, is Nishkama, desireless. He's desireless, and therefore, Krishna Bhakti Nishkamba Atayeva Shanta. Therefore, he can be peaceful. Whereas Bhukti, Mukti, Siddhi, those who desire opulence, liberation, mystic cities, because they still have desires, they can't be peaceful. They can't be completely peaceful. And we spoke about this, I believe, last week, that unfulfilled desires leads to a disturbed mind. Unfulfilled desires means that that I still have to make some effort to fulfill them. And because I haven't fulfilled them yet, therefore there is some hankering still within my heart. And of course, as Krishna also states elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita, wherever there is hankering, there'll have to be lamentation too. In fact, he says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Na Sochati Na Kankshati Samaksaveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. That for one who is Brahma Bhuta, who has achieved this platform of Prasanatma, he's self-satisfied. What is the symptom of his self-satisfaction? He doesn't hanker, he doesn't lament. Doesn't hanker for something that he would like to have, and he doesn't lament for something he got and didn't want. So that is hankering and lamentation. As long as there's unfilled, fulfilled desire, there will be hankering, and then because its fulfillment of that desire cannot fully satisfy the self, it will ultimately have to lead to lamentation. So as long as there's a hankering and lamentation, there can't be peace. That's just logic. It doesn't require a big philosopher, a great philosopher, a deep philosopher to draw that simple logical conclusion that along with hankering and lamentation, peace is, it may come and go. There may be moments of it, and there may be periodic times when we're feeling a little peaceful, like there's nothing disturbing me right now, and we call that peace. But Bhagavad Gita and Krishna's instructions and Srila Prabhupada's instructions help us to understand that simply to be not suffering or to be in a circumstance where our minds are not disturbed temporarily is not complete peace. And that's why Krishna says in this verse, he says that if a person's given up sense gratification, lives free from desires, material desires, who gives up all sense of proprietorship, and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. Meaning, this is an essential criteria to be really situated on a platform of peace. In the beginning of this chapter, a verse I oftentimes like to quote in this connection also, Krishna makes it very clear that one who is not connected to the Supreme can have neither a controlled mind or steady intelligence, without which there can be no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? So Krishna in the beginning says that if one is not connected, then the mind can't be controlled, because the mind is always looking for a resting place, and being connected to Krishna is actually a resting place for the mind. It's a place where one can repose the mind, and actually when the mind has favorably accepted Krishna in a favorable way, one will find a very natural reciprocal experience that Krishna, because he's a person, and sometimes that's also difficult to conceive, that the Supreme is a person. We may oftentimes think of him as an energy, or we may think of him as a collective everything, all one. But actually, Isha Upanishad, which is quoted here in this purport, states that that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and although all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly and complete in themselves, and whatever is produced of the complete whole also manifests many complete units, but even though so many complete units emanate from him, he always remains the complete balance. which essentially means that Krishna is so unlimited that he can simultaneously manifest unlimited universes. He can manifest everything is coming from him, and at the same time, he's never depleted. He's complete. He's full. Prabhupada used to say that spiritual mathematics is 1 - 1 = 1. Spiritual mathematics. Whereas generally we think 1 - 1 = 0. But no, spiritual mathematics is you can take everything from Krishna because everything is coming from Krishna. He says it. Bhagavad Gita makes it very clear. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattak sarvam pravartate. Everything's coming from me. Right? Etad yuni nibhutani savad hitya padhariya. Everything that's material, everything that is spiritual, I'm both its origin and dissolution. Everything. So everything's connected. Connect the dots, takes you back to Krishna. But even though everything is manifesting from him, Krishna never becomes depleted in any way. He's always the complete whole, and he's a person. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadya Adya Govinda Savakarana Karanam. Lord Brahma, this was his conclusion when he became perfectly realized and on the conclusion of Vedic wisdom in his Brahma Samhita, in his realized state of consciousness, he states Ishvara Parama Krishna, that the Supreme Ishvara is Krishna. He has an eternal form, which is Sat, eternal, Chit, full of knowledge, Ananda, full of bliss, Anadya, Adya, Govinda, he's the original primeval person, and Sarva Karana Karanam, he's the cause of all causes. Elsewhere he says, Advaitam Achutam Anadim Anantarupam. He says that he's non-dual, his body is not subject to decay, he's the beginning, he's Anantarupam, his form is endless, he has no beginning, he has no end, but he's always manifest as Navayovanam, as an ever-fresh youth. This is Krishna. So he is the fountainhead of all energies. And being the fountainhead of all energies means that unlimited universes can manifest from him, and at the same time, he's always has his identity separate from all of everything else that is created. Very difficult. In fact, if you try to conceive of it, most people will just, they'll get hung up. You know, they'll like, try to conceive of something that has no beginning. Where do you go with it? You know, where do you go? Stop for a while and try to, something has no beginning. Okay. First thing we say when Krishna has no beginning, people ask, well, who created Krishna? Wait a minute. Sarvakarana Karana is the cause of all causes. Everything. And when the depth of Vedic wisdom was revealed in the heart of Lord Brahma, who was the original being in this universe, of which there are unlimited universes, when that depth of Vedic wisdom was revealed in Lord Brahma's heart in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it says, Teni Brahma Hidayi Adi Kaviye Muyanti Yat Surya, that the depth of Vedic wisdom was manifest in his heart. What was that depth of Vedic wisdom? Krishna told him, Brahma, I existed before everything else was created. It is I whom existing while everything is manifest. And when everything is dissolved, I'll still be around. And then he says that whatever you see, if you don't see its connection with me, then if you don't see it's connected to me, you should know it's also coming from me because I created that too, which is the illusory energy. Can't get away from him. Even the illusory energy, that very energy that which caused or helps us to forget and throws us down, Krishna said, I created that too. So he says, whatever you see, if you don't see its connection with me, then it's my Maya. It's my illusory energy. Therefore, of course, sometimes I get carried away and I lose track of the time. Okay. Sometimes we think that When Krishna says this, he's saying that whatever you see, if you don't see its connection with me, then it's my illusory energy. So that means everything is connected to him. But if we don't see it's connected to him, then, and he says, whatever you see of any value, that's also what he says, very important point. Whatever you see of any value, if it's not connected to me, it's my illusory energy. So if we see something valuable, and if we don't see that it's connected to Krishna, then why is it valuable? Why? Generally because it's connected to me. We see its value in terms of its utilitarian purposes, or we see its value in terms of how it can be used to fulfill some other achievement, some other goal that may be, you know, actually could be philanthropically inclined also. But even philanthropically inclined, still everything is coming from Krishna. So he says, if you see its value, but if you don't see it's connected to me, then unfortunately your perspective is inaccurate because everything's connected to me. As we've already explained, everything is connected to Krishna. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada, understanding that, well, his vision, of course, is he sees everything connected to Krishna. And because he sees everything connected to Krishna, he always used everything for Krishna's service. And therefore, in his instructions, in his teachings, he helped us to understand that how to take our position of not having that perfect, complete vision and not become discouraged if we can't give everything up. Not to become discouraged. He gave us the best encouragement possible. Because what did he give? Instead of trying to detach us from everything, he only dedicated every fiber of his existence to giving Krishna. And someone who gives Krishna and makes him accessible, actually, what does he do? He opens the door. Moksha dvaram upavarta. In verse we just quoted, I think it was last night, ajaram pashanam atmana kavayovidu saeva sarashukrito moksha dvaram upavritam. Every learned person knows that attachment to material things is the cause of bondage. But one becomes attached to self-realized devotees, moksha dvam upavritam. It means it opens the door to liberation. We have to be attached. Prabhupada says right here, makes it very clear that desirelessness, nobody can be completely desireless. One has desire. And wherever there's desire, one is looking for the fulfillment of that desire. So therefore he's saying that the best way to become desireless is, in other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desirelessness. So even the desire to become Krishna conscious, how is that desire to become Krishna conscious awakened? Prabhupada knew the formula. And therefore, as I said, when he gives his commentaries and puts it into context and makes Krishna's teachings accessible, he knew that there's no way that people are going to just give up all sense of proprietorship. All people are going to just simply give up false ego. False ego means to, unfortunately, false ego means to identify with the body instead of knowing who I am. We talked about that last Sunday. I won't repeat the topic. For those who were here, we spoke about the difference between who am I and who I'm not. And false ego means I'm absorbed in who I am not. And real ego means to be absorbed in who I am. And Prabhupada even one time used analogy. For those who were here last week, I talked about analogies and how important analogies are. And he used an analogy that he said, he gives the example of the soul in the body. It's distinctly different from the body. ABCs of Bhagavad Gita, that the soul is no birth, nor death, nor having born spin, does he ever cease to be. He's unborn and dying, eternal, primeval, ever existing. He's not slain when the body is slain. Krishna makes it very clear. First elementary instruction to Arjuna. Arjuna, you're lamenting for what not is not worthy of grief, because those who are wise, they will lament neither for the living or the dead. Essentially, Krishna called Arjuna a little bit foolish. And therefore, the soul is eternal, and the soul is in a temporary body. So he gives the example that within every body is the soul, who is the knower of field of activities. He is conscious of his field of activities. He's conscious of what happens to the body. He feels the pleasures, the pains of the body. He identifies with the mind and with the dictations of the mind, not only the gross physical body, but the subtle body, which consists of the mind, intelligence, and false ego. And it's very difficult to extricate oneself from this identity. So he gives the example of the soul and the body and the super soul. And the super soul is the manifestation of the Supreme Lord, who is the witness within the heart of all living beings. Hare Krishna. And he explains that the super soul is Krishna. It's one of his manifestations. There is the Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabjate, Vedanti, Tat, Tat, Vidvidas, Tat, Vadyajjnanam, Advayam, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabjate. That learned transcendentalists who know this absolute truth, they call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Brahman is the all-pervasive impersonal aspect of the Supreme Lord, which is how he pervades the entire creation through his different energies. Paramatma is the aspect of Krishna who is situated within the heart of every living being as the witness and giving sanction for that living entity to act according to his desires. And Bhagavan is, as we spoke of before, that person who exists beyond everything in creation. So the Paramatma manifestation, doesn't identify with this body. But the Atma, the soul, when he's under the influence of false ego, which is very difficult to break free from, by the way, he identifies with the body. So Srila Prabhupada gives a very simple analogy. He talks about a driver in the car. And he says that just like a person who has his car, and generally, sometimes people, when they buy fancy cars, they may not be able to make a full payment on the car right away. They might actually put down a down payment to take out a loan, and they have to keep it well maintained because it's not their car, and even more so because they think it's their car. They think, I have to take care of it. I have to work also to make the monthly payments. I have to change the oil regularly. I wash it because it's brand new. I want to keep it clean. I have to make sure it's insured in case something happens to it, and I have to make sure that I put the right people behind the wheel, because if somebody doesn't know how to drive, I don't want them driving my car. And I have to make sure when I park it in this place that I don't park it in a place where somebody... In other words, there's a lot of thoughts that go into that car. It's my car. So, therefore, the more energy we invest in the car, the more we identify with it. Natural, right? And then he says, that's like the soul in the body. I have a body. I have to invest a lot of things. I have to work for it. I have to take care of the maintenance of it. I have so many other responsibilities, obligations towards it. I have connections to it that I also have to maintain. There's a certain amount of energy invested in the body. So in the same way, he says that the soul exists in the body and the super soul exists, but the super soul, he doesn't identify with the body. He's the knower of all fields. He's present in all bodies. So he says, just like this person that may be driving in his brand new car that he's invested a lot of time and energy in, and somebody comes and hits him. Excuse me, I missed an important point. He picked up a passenger. Because it's the soul and the super soul. So there's the driver and the passenger. Right. The super soul is the passenger and the soul is the driver of the car. So he picks up a passenger. And as he's driving, somebody comes and hits the car. And the driver thinks, oh no, he suffers. I mean, he feels pain. Like, I haven't made all my payments on it yet. My insurance, I don't know if it's going to cover this. And he immediately has to think, is the insurance going to, and how am I going to get to work for the next 2 weeks? I'm going to have to rent a car. So many thoughts go with that. But the passenger he picked up, he doesn't have the same. Doesn't identify in the same way. He doesn't connect with all the, I mean, he may feel compassion, and Krishna does too. With super soul, he feels compassion too. But he doesn't feel the pain. So he'll just get out and say, sorry, I think I'll take another car. Looks like you're going to be a little tied up for a while here. He doesn't feel the same. So in the same way, it's like the soul who identifies with the body. You know, it's very difficult to renounce false ego. It's very difficult to renounce attachments. And somebody comes in and says, hey, look, like somebody says, hey, this is not your car. Just give it to me and I'll take care of it for you, okay? Or these things don't belong to you. They all belong to me. Nobody's ready for that. I mean, maybe a few rare souls might be thinking, I'm frustrated enough to give it all up because I've already had enough time. Oh, no, 2 minutes. Anyways, Krishna says, Kalosmi, I am time. And I've come to devour everything in this world in the form of time. So he's even finishing me. I'm going to have to come to a close. But the point that I'm trying to make is, and I'll end on this point, Prabhupada understanding our inability to immediately renounce all these things, he gave us Krishna. He gave us Krishna and he awakened some attraction to Krishna. Without awakening some attraction to Krishna, then how can we ever become desiring, our desire is to become Krishna conscious? So simply the awakening of the desire to be Krishna conscious is as good as desirelessness. If one has that desire awakened, he'll continue to live his life in the pursuit of trying to understand who is Krishna and what is my relationship with him. And one who actually lives in this way, who'll begin to experience that all these things that I thought I had to give up, they're just going away on their own. Including all this time. I didn't plan it this way. Thank you for your attention, and I hope I said something relevant to this verse. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.